We've got Paula Duran here about to release the year's best dark fantasy and horror volume 2. Paula's returning guest. We interviewed you for volume 1 and I enjoyed it a lot. So I was very excited to get the opportunity to read volume 2. So thank you, Paula, for taking the time and, you know, for sitting with us to do a little chat today.
Thank you. I think that you've had a baby since I last saw you. That right?
Yeah.
I'm glad that happened, because if it hadn't, it would have been the longest pregnancy ever.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, he's about 10 months now. So I joke with people how like it goes by so much faster outside of the womb. Like I felt like I did feel like I was pregnant forever. And then now it's like, holy crap. He's like, you know, I feel like he's going to start walking any minute. So it's crazy how how fast the time flies.
I have a 9-month-old Thursday granddaughter, so right at the same age, and she's just getting too old too fast. So
yeah, it's funny. Like I have an older son who's like 4 years old. He just turned 4 a few months ago, and so it's interesting. Like I like the age gap, and I think you also did tell me last time, like yeah, once the younger one starts getting a personality, then maybe that's when they'll have a little bit more conflict. But for the first couple of years, it's gonna be fine. It'll be fun, and so far it is. You know, all that fun stuff.
You'll live.
Yeah. Let's start off with how about maybe giving like a brief summary of volume 2, or you know, maybe kind of like what led you here, maybe touch on volume 1 comparison a little bit, maybe things you did differently, things you liked and you kept the same, just to kind of give our readers a little bit of familiarity with what we're chatting about.
Yeah, this is actually the 12th volume of the series, which changed mm-hmm. publishers. So, you know, I've been doing this for a while now. So there's, you know, there's certain things that you look for. I think this one is interesting in that, well, first of all, there's 30 authors. I don't know how I managed to find 30 stories to all fit into this, but
yeah,
lots of different stories. Also, after it was all said and done and turned in, I realized the majority identify as women. So I just pick stories. I don't check. I don't even know the gender of a lot of my authors. You know, I just pick stories. So that I think that's kind of interesting, considering it wasn't that long ago that everyone kept saying, oh, women don't write horror and women don't read it. So
right.
I think that's definitely something far in the past now. As for the content, of course, every year it's different, but it's, you know, always a variety, always a lot of different things. There's a little bit of dark science fiction. There's a little bit of, you know, kind of spooky, creepy things. And there's a lot of, since the first volume I was putting together literally at the beginning of the pandemic, I kind of have
right.
since then thought a lot about and wrote a little bit in the introductions about what it is I look for. And I think after all of these years is that maybe I kind of find something positive in this dark stuff. And although mm-hmm. I don't consciously look for it, I think that after I read the stories, sometimes I either it's myself trying to find something positive for me, or maybe there is something positive there. And like the other thing is, I think that I've seen over the last decade or so is this so much variety as far as even where the stories are set, because we have so many great international authors now. But mm-hmm. I know in this one, there's like one set in China, Malaysia, Philippines. I mean, it's not a small town in Maine anymore. Thank God.
Yeah,
that's part of it. But, you know, I think that diversity is just, you know, great. And I think that's reflected just whenever you go out looking for, you know, the best stories in the year, I think that just automatically comes to the top. So that makes the job both hard and easy. There's a lot of good stuff. It's hard to make the decision on it. So
yeah, I bet. And so how did your experience from last year, like starting at the beginning of the pandemic versus like, you know, a year and a half later, we're still kind of in it. things are a little different. They were trying to figure it out still. How has your experience of releasing this one or starting off collecting stories for this one when compared to the previous one?
I, Yeah, I think that I think it's just more of, you know, you begin, you always see it's any type of speculative fiction is like they used to say of science fiction, that it's not about the future, it's about the present. And I think any type of speculative fiction, you run into that. And certainly, I know I ran across themes, again, it's all in retrospect after you put it all together and say, you know, there seemed to be several stories that were not haunted house stories, but houses that's, you know, centered on the home or centered on a domestic situation. I think that just started and reflected in the last year's time. And, you know, there are stories that are beginning to reflect, you know, pandemics and plagues and things like that. That was creeping in immediately. So I'd say that's some of the influence in there. You know, otherwise, there's just so many places to look, particularly for dark stuff. And every year I find new places and more places and keep looking.
So your process was pretty much the same, like, as, you know, like you said, it's like the 12th edition. So does anything stand out to you as like where you came across something or maybe you had to switch it up? Like however many stories, I can't imagine how many stories you read end up while doing these things, but has anything like come up, you know, come up where you've maybe been a little forced to do things a little bit differently?
I think you do that all the time. I think themes come and go. Just there's kind of osmosis of thought floating over all writers in the entire universe. You know, I know, for instance, I see, and I didn't see for years, but what I call dead girl stories, which is basically a woman who has, and often a very young woman who has been the victim, usually of a murder, somehow coming back to get revenge or haunt or whatever. And some of them are great, but when you find six of them in the same year, you can't put all six of them in, you know. There's always that sort of thing. I would think to myself, I would be happy never to read another zombie story ever. You know, I've never been, you know, I've done three zombie anthologies, but I'm not a big fan, you know, of zombies per se. Yet, you know, I think it's Steve Resnick Tim's story is but it's unlike any zombie type story I've ever read. Yet you could call it that, you know, same thing with a vampire story. Again, vampires, please. Yet there is a very interesting sort of, there's a vampire kind of thing there in which, you know, you're going, I guess you could call that a vampire story. So there's always that. And you're always also looking out for a variety. And so just like I said, once in a while, you do have to make that tough decision between, you know, I really can't use that many stories or this many stories about something sort of alike. I do think this year too, and I think that's why I wound up with 30 different authors. I think shorter stuff, it sort of surprised me. I used to have a larger word count with the previous publisher, so I could sneak in a novella once in a while. You know, I don't have quite as big a word count with this publisher, but I wasn't consciously, and I was never a big fan of like flash fiction or really short stuff. Yet I don't know whether it's just the quality of it or whether it's I'm used to it. I don't know. One way or the other, I'm finding those little gems. So I think that's kind of something that's just turned up too that I hadn't really thought about, but just has popped up.
Yeah, I imagine it keeps the task at hand a little more interesting too, even if it... So how does, like, with the example with the, like, the six dead girl stories, like, how do you choose then which one to include if you don't... You don't want to or can't include
it
all of them. Like, how do you choose?
To gut. It probably comes down to gut instinct when it comes down to that level of having to pick one or over the other. I'm sure there's things that influence me that I don't consciously think about. I definitely am not going to pick, you know, especially the publisher, any publisher wants to have recognizable names to put on the cover or who are at least recognizable within the genre. There's good stories by those folks, but I'm not going to particularly pick that dead girl story by a famous author over one that I like much, much better by a new author.
Sure.
And I think any editor will tell you there's also nothing, you know, more thrilling than finding a writer who is new or new to you at least, and being able to put them in their very first year's best. Certainly not shutting the door on, you know, the big guys, but you know, so I think it just comes down to personal gut feeling when it's making decisions. And that's the same thing with how do you define what's the best? It's I've never been one to say these are the best in every respect and ways. And no, these are among the best. There's certainly right. The stories I think are among the best. But, you know, there's other anthologies out there that also are looking for the best. And so, you know, it's a marketing thing. It's not exact science by any means. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it comes down to it's and what is it that turns me on? Who knows? You know, it's just going to be. That's the thing about this stuff. I mean, what horror is an emotion? I mean, how many times have you heard that? And yeah. We all react differently emotionally. So going to affect you one way may not affect me. You know, you might be really into ghost stories and they might really do something for you. Me, it's kind of maybe, you know, just using that as example because I do like ghost stories. But again, it's what affects you. And sometimes after this process is done, I mean, it seems forever ago, but I mean, I turned it in, you know, around the 1st of March or so, but it seems like I just got copies, physical copies. Oh, look,
yeah.
Oh, look, I can show you.
Yay.
I look at it and I say, oh yeah, I've totally forgotten them, you know, by now. So it's like rediscovery again.
I appreciate how you say, you know, it's kind of like a gut feeling and you can't quite like articulate your reasoning all the time because yeah, like I, you know, I read so many books and I really like, I love reading, but then when I'm like, you know, I'm tasked with reviewing them and then I'll, you know, coming up with questions about like maybe what I want to know about, what I think other people want to know about, like fellow bookworms or whatever. And some of it, like I can't really explain why this resonated with me a little bit better than another work, even by the same author, you know, or I can't really explain why, you know, other than I enjoy the writing style or I enjoy some of the characters. Like those are some kind of like easy things for me to pick up on. But yeah, it's like other things where I'm like, I don't like it as much as their previous work. And I'm not quite sure why, like, you know, and so, no, I appreciate it. It's good to know that it's similar when you're trying to put together a collection and, you know, you come across the same genre within the genre. And it's really hard to pick because I'm sure, you know, if you're searching for the best, I'm sure you found like some really good ones that unfortunately you had to give them the boot a little bit just because they just didn't fit.
Well, the reviewing thing is a good analogy, dude, because I've reviewed for years too. And when I review, I mean, I'm also reviewing for a particular audience. I think that's one thing about the internet now. You're often reviewing for a much broader audience instead of for a single publication, which you used to do more of. But I know that I have reviewed books in the past for entirely different audiences, that the reviews are entirely different because I'm trying to say, this is what the people who read this publication want to feel and know about this book. Whereas this is a different group here. And, you know, I think it's almost harder now because you are, you know, a more scattered approach of who are, you know, you're online. Anybody could be reading this.
Yeah,
I review still for Locus, and at least with Locus, I know that's a pretty genre specific group with Locus, and so you know it's people who are pretty knowledgeable about what you're doing.
Sure.
It's not as broad a thing, but it's the same thing. I think after especially all these years, I don't have a vast following, but I mean, I think people know what to expect from this particular anthology. I think they know to expect dark fantasy, whatever the heck that is, over horror. I think they know that there's going to be new authors. I think they know there's going to be a diversity. And I think, I guess just subconsciously, I kind of, you know, saying, this is for my people. You know,
I think I might've asked you this last year. So are there any authors that like either not on purpose, like, or I would say like, you know, subconsciously or that stand out like year after year that you kind of tend to gravitate towards? Like, do you have a favorite author that maybe you come across that where you're like, oh, I really like this person, but I want to give somebody else a chance kind of thing? Like, have you ever?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because someday I'm going to have to sit down and count people who have been repeaters, you know. Yeah. Kind of thing. Steve Resnick Tim, who I mentioned earlier, he is somebody, you know, and I think Steve would be admitted to being an old white guy. He just turns out so many good stories. Stephen Graham Jones is somebody I have been reprinting for years, and all of a sudden, Stephen Graham Jones is big. You know, it's delightful to see that, you know, happen.
Yeah.
But again, there are people like that who just year after year, there's always good, usually several to pick from. There's a few Australian writers. Angela Slatter is one of them. Again, when I first started reading her stuff, it was back, she was this obscure person from, you know, Australia, and then suddenly she started winning awards and things. So I think there's people like that who I don't, I have to admit, sometimes the bar's a little higher.
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to have to be really good.
Because right.
Been here before. So I guess instead of it being easier from some of those people that I've picked before, maybe it's a little harder. You know, maybe I might read six of their stories, you know.
Sure.
And say, okay, prove it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, so, also if they're productive, they maybe deserve a little bit more attention to it.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, some people are just prolific, you know, mm-hmm. and they do a lot of short fiction. Other people who are among my favorite authors simply don't do that much short fiction, or it can be an off year. And I intentionally, you know, there are people that I say, hey, did you, you know, if I see that they have a collection coming out and I haven't seen it, you know, is there anything new in this from this last year? Do I need to make sure I, you know, get hold of this before the end of the year or whatever, you know, while I'm mm-hmm. still looking at stuff? So, yeah, I think that there's people. I don't think I've ever just flat. One person, there's an interesting one I just thought of. Brian Evanson, who I've read his stuff for years, and he's an acclaimed, fabulous writer. I didn't realize, I don't know how many times he almost made it until this year when I finally wrote him. And he said, oh, I'm so, and I said, I really didn't realize. I had never actually said, you know, oh, I would love to have, you know, and because I think every year there's a couple of his stories at least that I have always considered, you know, maybe down to the last bit. And you know, maybe I feel like, well, there'll always be another good Brian Evanson story.
You know. Is that what you do? And yeah, sometimes honorable mentions.
I have just started doing that these last two. Didn't do that before, and I'm trying to be well, more organized. That's part of it, of keeping track of my notes and lists. That's part of it. But yeah, simply because, hey, here's 200 more stories that are definitely good. Also, among those 100 or 200 more stories, there are stories that I know have been picked up by another editor for a year's best. Ellen Datlow, who of course does year's best horror, there are times when I know Ellen has picked something, and we both have a limited amount of space, so I know she picked something. Sometimes we double. Once in a while you'll cross with people with, you know, year's best fantasy in science fiction too. Not often, it's nothing you go out of your way to do, but you know, so there usually are, you know, stories that I know are being published elsewhere that I haven't got. Or there are authors who will flat out say, no, I've already been selected for this. And I've had authors say, I'd rather you pick another story since I know I'm already in Ellen's year's best.
Oh, okay. So, interesting.
Yeah.
So is that usually how it works, where you like kind of you reach out to them at almost like a call for entries, or like you find something and then you reach out to them and say, hey, with your permission, XYZ?
For me, it's the finding process. I have certain things that, yeah, I have certain things. I always am trying to keep up with, you know, anthologies with original stuff, collections with original stuff. 99% of the process is me just reading and finding and coming up with my list. And I try to come up with everything finalized as I want it before I contact writers and ask them, you know, can I reprint your story? Like I said, there are a few authors who just as a, you know, basic course, I just kind of say, hey, you know, what have you had new this year? Or did you do new this year? Just for simply because it's easier that way. You know, but most of it's just, I have a long list of things that I go through starting around this time of year. I'm also doing, starting next year, a new series called Year's Best Fantasy. So I'm reading for that at the same time, and it's proving to be much more difficult than I thought it would be.
Oh, wow. what are you finding most difficult about that? Or maybe just comparing the two even?
Well, you know, I'm so used to ferreting out that I try to find as many sources as I can. I don't just...
Okay, sure.
There, once in a while, you run across your desk and, you know, well, there's the same 12 things over and over, you know. They with fantasy, it's so broad, and so much of it is not published as fantasy. It's published as something surreal or literary or whatever. And I'm just not as connected to that, you know, pathway of publication as I am looking for the dark stuff. It's, you know, I've always been working in fantasy too, but when you come to picking short fiction, there's lots of places, but I just feel at this point that I'm missing something. And I'm coming up on the end of the year and I have an early deadline and missing. And I know come February after I've turned this in, there's going to be something fabulous that I missed. You know? So there's this air of desperation about me. Yes. I think part of it is with the dark stuff, I'm into a rhythm, you know, with the fantasy, it's on one hand, it's new and exciting. And I get to expose people to stuff that I otherwise had. I mean, every year there's stuff of, darn, I wish that were darker. I just can't call it dark. Or science fiction, also the same thing of darn.
Oh, okay, sure.
It's kind of hopeful science fiction in the end. Can't squeeze that in. So I can't that one with fantasy. But,
it's like at the last minute.
Exactly. So that's where the challenge is now is mostly I just, even though I have more material than I can deal with at this point, I still feel... Oh gosh, there's something, because there always is every year. There's always something that you don't find out about till 6 months later. But, you know, I feel the pressure more with a new project.
Yeah, for sure. What made you want to check out fantasy then, like kind of switch gears? Was it something you had your eye on or you felt like a challenge?
Yeah, I have done in the past for a couple of years. I did a year's best science fiction fantasy novellas, which was exciting to do. Novellas don't sell well in that form, unfortunately. So that was that. But, you know, it's not that I kind of fell into being a horror goddess. I mean, I was originally a reader of science fiction and fantasy and not so much horror. So it was a whole new thing to me when I got into it, these many years ago. So fantasy is something that I love and that there's a lot of exciting stuff going on in. That I, like I said, I would run across things that I would go, gosh, I wish I was doing a year's best fantasy too, because one really has done a year's best fantasy alone for quite a while now. There was some, you know, back in the day. And, you know, I think it's been maybe since the end of the 90s or so, maybe 15, 20 years since there was a year's best fantasy.
Yeah, because I'm thinking like, well, fantasy, I read fantasy all the time, but that's more in like novel.
Yeah,
and you know, like a novel form, longer stories. So the authors are building.
Exactly. And you have almost that thing, epic fantasy is almost, when you think fantasy, you think trilogy. You think something long, whereas... You know, it's the same part of fantasy that shows up in the shorter works is that fabulous world building that you love, the great characters. You know, there is that flight of imagination that you really only get in fantasy. That to me is so grounded but ungrounded at the same time. So it's kind of something. So I was just thrilled, you know, when, you know, the opportunity came up to, you know, yes, I'll give it a shot, maybe, you know. I hope that I'm up to the job. Let's say that.
I mean, you're experienced enough, I would say, that, you know, whether, you know, you're tackling on a new project or, you know, a new type of project from the same things that you've been doing. So it's like, take that nervousness with you, you know, use it to like, take, you know, obviously you're going to take it seriously no matter what, but try to use that nervousness to your advantage.
It's like stage fright, I think, you know, they say you can't actor unless you have stage fright, because that's what gives you the edge to get out there.
Right.
So maybe that's where I am with it right now. It's just anthology stage fright. So we'll see.
I'm sure it'll be great, because the only thing I could think of is like, you're confident in what you've already been doing. You know that you can do it. And so, you know, even if it's just like, just fake it till you make it, you know, just fake the confidence that you can tackle this new, like, different genre that you've had your eye on for a little while, you know, like,
well, just finally go for it. I have the chutzpah to try it, you know.
Yeah.
That's one thing. The older you get, the more you get less afraid of, I'll try. You
know? Yeah, I think I've read, you know, comments from people just like you get to a certain age where you just don't, you really don't care what people think. And you just, like, you've seen enough or you've done enough. I would love to get to that point where it's just like, no, just go for it. Like, just go for it.
You know, I think it's almost a thing of, you know, it's that, I don't care who you are, how wonderful you are. You know, there's always going to be somebody who may not like you or not like what you do or whatever, you know. And I think the longer you live, it's just that you look back and those people, who cares anymore?
Yeah.
It's not like any of that ever really affected who you are or what you do, you know. And I think the more that happens, you know, it's just like when you're a teenager, every pimple counted, you know.
Of course. It's like anything, oh, no, anybody whispered,
was, I will die.
Yeah. Like if I don't go to this event, everybody's going to know. And
one other thing that's kind of helped me just recently is I recently taken a full-time job outside of publishing for the first time since 1999. I'm actually going into an office with people who are not.
How is that going for you?
You know, science. It's different. It's different, but it is nice because I work with people younger than I am, you know.
Okay.
And they kind of reassure me once in a while that you know, is that, yeah, well, you're just living proof that old people can learn new things.
So, yeah. There you go. That's your confidence boost if you ever needed one.
Really?
So this is like a two-part question. What's your favorite part about developing anthologies and like what's the most challenging part of it?
I guess this applies to the Year's Best too, but it certainly applies to anything with the theme. Mm. Year's Best Fantasy next year will be my 50th anthology.
Wow.
49 of those since 2006. So with each one, if you're looking at a theme, it's exciting to find those stories. When you're developing something, you know there's some good stuff there, or you would not take it on. But it's that process of research and discovery. And I think that's the same thing with the Year's Best too, is that, you know, it's that great movie that you really had never heard of and you just happened to watch one night and wind up crying. Wonderful. You know, it's the same thing. I mean, it's still exciting, the discovery. So the challenging part is finding the material for any anthology. There's always a challenge there of, you know, am I going to find this stuff? Is it going to be stuff I can get? I mean, there's always stuff that you can't get for some anthologies. Years past, you're usually pretty lucky. I think in all of these years, I've only been turned down a couple of times. And then there's a few that you don't even try for because you know you can't get them. But so I think the challenge is, part of what we talked about before is making sure that you are covering the field enough, that you are doing. I think that's part of the challenge, is that you are getting out there and reading enough of it that you have some idea, at least, of how vast a pool you're getting from. And I think the other challenge is keeping it fresh, because we talked about gut feeling and personal proclivities. You know, at what point does my personal taste, am I letting that cloud what might be a good vampire story or a zombie story or whatever? At what point am I letting a favorite author entrance me more easily than a new author? Yeah. I mean, so I think it's, again, it's maybe a judgment thing. I think that's the challenge, is I hope that I'm still doing okay with it. But that, I think that's a challenge that you should have. I think any anthologist should want to do their best. And I think that's part of the challenge, is not getting lackadaisical. It's not getting ho-hum, another year, another volume. I can't think of anyone who does that, but I think that's something you definitely don't want to do.
So it's so funny that you're talking about like how you got like a normal, quote unquote, normal job now, like a 9-to-5 job outside of the house after, because I remember last year you're talking about how you were working from home before the pandemic, just the style of your work.
Yeah.
So like, have you given thought, and honestly, I'm sorry, I don't know if I've asked this last year, but have you given to thought like what you might be doing if you weren't creating anthologies?
Yes and no. Like I said, I've been doing this, and I've been lucky enough to be involved in all of this for so long now. Yet at the same time, one reason that I'm working at a regular job outside of publishing is I'm lucky to be doing 2 anthologies a year, as opposed to working full time for a publisher I did not go out and find a full time job just for jollies. You got to pay the bills. On one hand, on one hand, I feel like I'm distancing from editing, which it's one thing. It gives me a new perspective. On the other hand, looking down, the future, I'm going, how much longer and how involved do I want to be going forward?
Yeah.
Just the time, the time involved is, and I know friends have said, and there are lots of people who do a lot of work, in publishing who have full-time jobs and families and everything, they're going, no, you'll get used to it. It's okay. And I'm just going like, I'm not sure I want to get used to it. I'm not sure I want to, be that divided thing. So, at this point, it's kind of like from being totally immersed for so long in the whole world to being distinct and being involved. And the company I'm working for we're involved with toys, and right now we're being phenomenally successful. And that's a whole new thing too. People want to buy our product. It's not like books where you're begging with people, please buy books.
Right.
We have a great product. And since I started working with them, we have been breaking records every month, and it's just, it's a different perspective to be working in an industry that there's a lot of things that are like sales reps, no matter where. It's like, it's kind of new and exciting to be involved in something different. And so I don't know, I'm kind of like in a wait and see of whether it's just going to be the day job or whether it's something I'm more involved in, and how involved I can remain in keeping my fingers in a lot of little things.
It's like, almost, you don't want to turn your brain to turn to mush, and you want to like keep, you don't want to get too comfortable, I guess, and it depends on everybody's personality too. Some people are totally content doing the same thing. And like, cause some people don't treat their job as like their career, cause it's like, well, there's so much more to life than that, of course. But then there are some people who are just very career driven, and that's like, they got not like tunnel vision, but they're very like diligent, they're disciplined,
editing turned into a career, for me, whereas for most people, unless they are involved in New York publishing, it is something part-time or something they do for love. Yeah. Often they're spending money to be a publisher or to be an editor, I very much was motivated also, this is a way for me to make money, not a lot, but it was, how I made my living. And and what I'm doing now, although it's not something that I see as a career, but it is something, one reason it's a small office group that we were selected to work together, to be diverse, but also to have the feeling of working together. And so I was interviewed by everyone in the building, before I got the job, because it was more important that you fit in than to have XYZ skill set kind of thing. So again, that's just like, it's not something that I see as a career goal, yet at the same time, it is something you can't help but be immersed in because that's where you are. And like I said, it's just a different thing as instead of talking about this stuff that we're talking about right now all the time, I talk about other stuff. And so, I think my family's getting tired of hearing about what I do. at work. You know, thinking, like, we liked it better when she was just at home and we knew about that stuff and could just tune them out and pretend like we were interested. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's just like I was in the car with two grandchildren and their parents, and we had a 30-minute drive, and something about the subject of zombies came up with the 6-year-old. And trust me, 6 and 7 and 8-year-olds have a totally different concept of zombies. They're fun. Zombies are fun.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. and so something about, and I said something about the subject of zombies came up, as it does. And I said, I don't know. I'm kind of tired of zombies. You know, I did 3 zombie books. And he said, you did zombie book? Because 6-year-olds have no idea what an anthology is.
Yeah,
one
right.
of those zombie books I wouldn't let most 18-year-olds read. It's so extreme, you know. So just the idea as they get older of what do you, and his father says, it means Shama wrote, she wrote 3 books about zombies. I said, no, I didn't. I edited it. He says, you wrote 3 books about zombies. Just keep it simple. He's 6.
Right.
and so, you know, like they look at these books, you know, and they know I have something to do with books. What, you know, and it's the same thing. It's like going to work in my office at my house. They that's, oh, you're going to work at your computer and do something with books. So same thing. I think the rest of the world is very much like, oh, yeah, something with books.
No, honestly, I have read short stories from before. I think I came across your anthology last year, the one that I read last year. It opened a little bit of a new world for me because I was like, oh, wait, hold on. She's done a crap load of these. I guess I just didn't think that, you know, there were volumes out for, you know, just a collection of artists for just to give authors, just to give them the chance to like, just to give them some exposure based on, you know, what they put out that year in that particular like category. And so I remember thinking it was like so cool. And when you were releasing the second one or you know, the subsequent one, I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, because
I hope lots of people feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm a huge dork and bookworm, but I don't know. I also like that short stories, like they're like in a nice little package and you can just, you know, you don't have to go pick up your book again and remember, okay, wait, where am I? It's just like, oh, this is a whole nother story. This is a whole nother author. This is a whole nother, you know.
I honestly got into short fiction when I had infants nursing.
Yeah.
You could hold a copy of fantasy and science fiction or Asimov's in one hand and nurse. And again, you could read and finish a story with a small child in your lap, you know.
Yep.
Whereas a novel becomes very challenging, as you know, sometimes, you know, if you can't stay awake after they're in bed. So like I said, short fiction, and to me too, it's because of the lifestyle we lead now, because of, you know, the way our lives are, it seems like you can find a lot of the pleasure that you get from a novel. And God knows I love novels, you know, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's also refreshing to be able to complete something.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not like the days when, and I know you lived this too, of, oh my God, life is stopping. I'm going to finish this book. It's so wonderful. Yeah. I'm going to stay up all night reading it, or I'm going to skip class, or I'm going to go in late, whatever. I'm going to read this book. And as life gets more complicated, you can't do that anymore. Whereas with short fiction, you can sometimes get kind of that satisfaction and you know, be able to complete it and have the whole experience. So, you know, that's one thing I love about it.
You know, for sure. And like, that's what I love about it too. Cause I sometimes, you know, while I'm commuting or running or walking, I'll either listen to a podcast or an audiobook. And so it helps to have the short stories, helps to break it up. I'm not confusing myself by switching in between, you know, literary pieces and what have you. So just a couple more questions before we wrap up here. Something I was also curious about last year was, do you have any input in like the what the cover is going to look like?
Yes, to an extent. With this publisher, they very much rely on stock art, believe it or not. It is stock art that they're using. Stock art has gotten really good. And so I am kind of limited a little bit. I do, working with the small publishers that I did earlier, we could be very clever and getting art from artists to reusing art that they'd already got paid for, you know, for a lot of covers and things. I kind of limited and I, on these, I've been, said, here's some ideas. They came to me first and I wanted to make sure, because an art director's, if they aren't a dark fantasy person themselves, their first inclination when they see the H word is to go with something gruesome or gory or that screams something, you know. Yeah. And that's what I pointed out and gave them examples from the past of where, you know, we're looking for something iconic or with this feeling, nothing. You know, no zombies eyeballs dripping out, no screaming skulls and blood and stuff. So right. Definitely they knew where I was coming from, you know, before giving me some art. And then we're very lucky to find this artist who came out. It happens to be the same artist this year from last year.
Okay.
And again, it's with the year's best fantasy on that one. I told her, again, my concept of what fantasy is and let's stay away from elves and fairies and unicorns, yeah. and gave her some artists that I tried to suggest gently that maybe they could work a deal with this artist or two, you know.
Right.
I don't get to decide everything, but again, it's a good art director, and whenever you've got a good art director, you're in good shape.
I imagine that's... You have to trust them. You have to trust their expertise and hope. Because, yeah, I don't know. I guess I was just wondering, because I was like, if, you know, if the covers were relating to any one particular story. Because I finished the collection, I was like, yeah. I don't remember.
In fact, that's the first question, that because we're able to start a lot earlier on Year's Best Fantasy, because it wasn't the first volume of we had to get out kind of quickly from contract to whenever we had more leisure. You know, she says, are there any stories that we could, and I'm going like, I almost wouldn't want to play off a specific story when you're looking at 20 or 25 or even 30 stories.
Right.
You don't really want to. The same thing when setting up things like this, the publicist is going, oh, could we contact some of the authors, because I'm sure there are authors in this that people would much rather have on than me on a podcast, you know. Yet at the same time, I felt bad about that because I didn't want to single anyone out as representative, because no one is. I mean, you know. And secondly, even to feel like imposing on their time. I'm sure there are folks that would do it, but those, for those two reasons, is I felt like, you know, would other authors feel less, I don't know, less attention being paid to them?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you can't have all 30 of them on, nor could all 30 of them, especially the ones in, you know, Thailand and Australia, hard to get with you. So, you know, it's just so, it's kind of, I just kind of said, no, let's stick with it as a whole, because I don't think there is anything except the feeling. And again, so with the covers, I'm looking for something dark, obviously, but not, you look back at the previous volumes and we had a particular style where we could use small pieces of art for the whole layout. And we kind of stayed with tropes. We had one that was had a gargoyle. We had a haunted house. Also, you know, we had a ghost. We had a cemetery. I mean, we went through 10 years of different images that all evoked something about the subject. You know, yet at the same time didn't say, oh, by the way, it's not like a theme anthology where if it is a theme anthology on ghosts, obviously you want something that says ghosts on the cover. If you are doing zombies, you want something zombies. With this, I ask for this atmosphere, and I hope that's what we come up with, is something that says to the reader who doesn't know the series of, oh, this is something I'm interested in. This is, you know, something that looks good. But at the same time also says what it's not, if that makes sense. Because I do get hate mail occasionally of, you know, I bought your anthology such and such, and it didn't scare me at all. It wasn't really horror. It wasn't, the, you know, and, yeah, well, like it bothers me. Yeah. And, you know,
right.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Right.
But no, I like I said, I mean, there's different levels. I think horror is more than anything of genres. There are different levels of readership. I think there's the entry level of when you are 7 years old and reading stories to scare you in the dark. I mean, those are great. They're wonderful. Yeah. you know, but then you mature to another level, and then maybe you enter your Stephen King era, and then maybe you know, so that there are different levels of readership that I don't want them to expect. This is going to be, you know, boogie jump out and shock you kind of stories, because it's not what I'm looking for. You know, at the same time, you want to evoke that atmosphere more than anything specific.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I liked about a lot of the stories, where it was kind of like eerie and chilling, but it wasn't like super scary. It was just kind of like, oh, I don't like that. Like, I don't like how that made me feel for a hot second. You know,
disturbing. Yeah, right, exactly. And I think that, yeah, it's all about. It's that feeling of uneasiness, that feeling of things are not quite right. And I think that's the whole essence of it, is that it's a normal world. Everything's fine and dandy, and reality is nice and solid, and you know left from right and up from down. Not exactly. And that to me, and that I think people, even in, you know, any media, I think it's that sense of, it can grow into a sense of foreboding. It can grow into something that's chilling or terrifying, but it's that slight, something is not right from the norm, and whatever the norm is for you, there's something slightly askew. And some of the stories are just very slight. There's something that's just not quite right, that just leaves you a little. And I think others, and maybe again because I like the kind of story that does make you come back and think about it later on, you know, and I think the kind of stories that I like are the kind that months later you might have something that resonates of, oh yeah, it makes you think about something a little differently or from a different perspective, or you see something. I have one story in this volume that's about, it's a very friendly, it's a house that wants a family. It's really kind of a warm and fuzzy story. And
I really liked that one.
there's a couple in this one too. Oh, this Drunk Physics by Kelly Armstrong.
Yeah.
It's really there's someone calling from inside the house, if you get down to it. It's really just, you know, but the fact that she uses new technology and uses streaming media and you know, the thing that they're doing, it just made it so relevant that you can get that same kind of, oh, there's somebody using my computer feeling from it, you know, and later. And like I said, I don't care who you are. You still have that, when the phone rings, who is it kind of feeling? It's the same thing. Who's texting me? Who is this? Who's saying this?
Right.
And some of the things that are dealing, like, again, the ones that kind of the science fictional edge of dealing with genetics or something. Again, I think that's in all of our lives that we can't help but think about it. Again, stories about disease or the pandemic type of thing of it just, you know, it resonates with you and makes you think a little differently, let's say. So,
yeah, for sure. So one last question before we sign off here. So, you know, given your experience, you've like read a bunch of stories, you've read like so many authors, a lot of repeat ones. I assume by now that you can recognize like a really good one, and you kind of like know, how, in what ways a story might fall short, you know, or at least by the standards that you set for these particular collections. So like, what advice would you give to like a novice author, a writer, a storyteller? Like what would you say to them, like, in your opinion, based on your experience, like what makes a good writer, or what would make you choose their story for one of your collections?
It's got to be a good story. I think to an extent, being true to yourself, I think the stories that, whether it's speaking through a character or it can be totally divorced from your personal experience as a writer. But to me, the best writers can somehow create that situation, those characters that are somehow true, that truthfulness is there at the core. So if for a novice writer, I think sometimes it's being true to your own feelings. Don't try to write like somebody else. Don't, you know, try to write a story like this or like that. I mean, you have to have the basics. And that's where I'm really lucky dealing with this genre, is the level of writing is good. period. You have to be good. There's a lot of really bad writers out there that don't understand why they're not getting published. Yeah. It's because you just aren't up to snuff. Maybe you can get published in a literary genre or mystery or something. And I'm not disparaging anything, but I'm just saying the level of writing is very high. And unless you're capable of that, you just need to keep working on your craft and being persistent. But again, there's something, there's a core meaning. It seems like I don't care whether you're the most, you know, successful writer in the world or you know, rank newcomer. There's something that seems to keep coming through, and no matter how bizarre, how strange, how out there, it comes back to that feeling of authenticity, of truthfulness, of something that you truly feel comes through. And I think that you can be very clever and fake that, and that's fine too. But I think that's part of it. Is don't try to be something you're not. Don't push it. You know, whatever it is, this is that I think we both, you know, being mother type people, you know, we talked about a story last year that resonated with both of us, that Rebecca Campbell did, that was about being pregnant and having a child. And it's that kind of thing. I think that's, you know, something that I think she came through her own experience as a mother and your own fears with that to make a great story out of it. I think that Kelly Armstrong with Drunk Physics, I'm sure somewhere in the back of her mind at some point she thought, hey, what if, you know, what is it? Elizabeth Baer's story, which is kind of new Lovecraftian. Yet at the same time, this character actually reoccurs in other stories of hers. That I recognize because I've worked with Bear a long time and have read so many of her stories. But to her, this particular character I was so glad to see him back. Oh, you know, lovely. It's just wonderful. I see that he's just doing fine, you know. And some of the newer writers, I think you feel that, you know, their childhood sometimes come up, or their childhood fears sometimes. I think sometimes some of their newer writers' strong time stories are delving into that. Particularly when you're looking at, again, talking about diverse authors, of people who are dealing with mythos that is not particularly Western. It is, you know, I think Nigerian, we have several Western African themes. In the Indies, we have several, you know, like I think Jamaica and places like that. But again, they're dealing with the spooky things, the scary things that were used to frighten them as children, that I might never have heard of this particular kind of bugaboo, but it certainly resonates because it's truth. It's something that is core for all of us, even though it's a different name and a different thing. So that's really, like I said, I don't want to discourage anyone, certainly, but it is, you know, it is not easy. And if you, you know, if you find that you're trying to do something like somebody else, chances are you're not going to make it too far. You need to find your own voice and your own experience to use in it.
That's so true. And that's something to think about for me, at least. Like, why was I much more impressed by this particular story than this one? Like, it depends on if you could. I feel like you could kind of tell sometimes, too, when somebody's trying too hard, or they're, I don't want to say copy, but they're using something as a reference almost. It's like a guide when it's, it's like, you know, if you really want to, you just got to keep going.
And you're using more of a formula because you're working with, it's just like with the novel, you've got more room to expand and you can be. And I know you've had the experience of just being amazed by the pyrotechnics in a novel or the level of something. With science fiction, I often enjoy science fiction. I really don't get the science. I'm not that smart, but I don't care. It's great. You know, they did a great job with it. You know, or just pulling so many things in together to make this particular, you know, feasible science in there. Whereas with the shorter, you are working within an arc. You are working within, you know, a concise thing, and you don't have as much room. You don't have as much room to make mistakes either.
Yeah.
You have to establish it. You have to get it going. And particularly since I do review, and I try to be positive about, you know, and encouraging to people, is once in a while, my review really is kind of brief of, you know, this really had something to it, but just didn't quite make it. I mean, I try to be better than that with it, but it is, it's so often you do see that's the next level that a lot of folks, if you're reading 100 stories and there's two of them out of that 100 that you really feel is a cut above. It doesn't mean that other 98 is particularly bad stories. It just means that they're missing something, and it can be something like we talked about before that you can't quite define. It could be maybe they don't quite end. Maybe they don't have convincing characters. Maybe there can be so many small things that can, you know, it's space of not that many words that can not totally work. So luckily there's also a lot of opportunities out there right now. So that's great too, is that there are so many places you can be published.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Cause I always wonder about that, you know, if somebody who's switching the way in which they're trying to tell their stories, it's like, well, you know, why do you make these certain choices? And I think I could tell sometimes when something starts out as a short story and then they decided to that there was so much more that they could do with it.
Well, and sometimes what ruins, and I can think of a couple this last year that the stories were great, but they obviously were beginnings of something else. Sometimes that just doesn't work. Sometimes it can be good enough that it does work, but sometimes it's just, wow, what a great beginning of a book. But it's just not, you know, it's exciting and it's wonderful. And there is a story arc to it and all of that, but it's just, obviously it's part of a bigger whole that's just not all there, you know, and that can be good. That's tricky. I think a lot of people can't pull that off. Some people can, but like I said, there's a lot of pitfalls in there. It's anybody who's read a lot of bad stories, that's really kind of how I started out as an editor, was workshopping with new writers. And you see the same mistakes over and over and over and over again. And once you see the same mistakes, you start realizing those are indeed mistakes. And you know, it's something that develops your instinct for what does work in the story. I am not a fiction writer. I don't have the imagination and I don't have the persistence. And I don't like rejection. You know, those are things that all writers have to deal with, you know. And I often ask people, why do you keep doing this? People who have been and again, success is something you can define in many ways. But I did ask someone that you know, close to my age once, that, you know, who's been doing this for decades now and has attained a certain level of success. And I said, what keeps you going? Why? I couldn't possibly think of doing this if I had. And I have to, she says, you know, I have to write. I think that's, these folks just have to do it and they do it.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Paula.
Thank you, Megan.
Always a great time. Yeah. Great time talking to you. I was excited to read the second volume. Like I said before, I was like, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know how I would feel about reading a whole collection of short stories. And then once the second volume was coming around, I was like, oh, cool. You know, I was like a little dork about it. And so I'm glad I had the opportunity again and also to chat with you again and talk about, it was like a different approach, because you're not the author, you're the person collecting and kind of setting the bar, and to see what makes it this year for this particular collection. So it's always interesting to get your to get your perspective on this particular type of project.
Thanks.
So it comes out October 19th, correct?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. The Year's Best Dark Fantasy and Horror Volume 2. People can pick it up after October 19th. In the meantime, you can read the first one or you can read any of the other million ones you've already done before over the past, you know, I think you said 20 years was a lot. It was like how long you've been doing it.
A lot of them are still out there.
Yeah, people have got plenty to choose from. So thank you so much, Paula.
And there's still at least an ebook. Most of them are still out there.
Yeah. Well, best of luck, and I'll keep an eye out for your new fantasy project coming up too.
I'm sure I will see if we can get hold of you for that one too.
Perfect. I will not turn you down. So bye bye.
Take care.